Inspectors, we are interrupting your scheduled programming to bring you a special episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast.
Reaper indoctrination is an insidious means of corrupting organic minds.
I am assuming direct control.
Listen to yourself. You're indoctrinated.
So, Spectres, someone has signed up for our Reaper tier patron level, and that means a few things. Number one, it means Tom and I are indoctrinated today. It also means that they get to pick a topic once every month to tell Tom and I what to talk about here on the show.
They get to make all the decisions. They get to control everything.
They are controlling our minds. They have assumed direct control, and they have picked the topic for today's episode, which is Garrus.
Just
the
Garrus.
Reapers.
just
the Reapers demand Garrus.
they want Garrus.
We have dillied long enough. We have dallied long enough.
Also, we get more of these sound effects.
Yes, we get more Reaper.
More
sound
Reaper effects. So these episodes will be called Indoctrinated Week as we try to adhere to the whispers in our head telling us what episode to do next. So, Sam, tell us more about what the whispers are telling you in your mind.
Listen to yourself. You're indoctrinated.
Well, we are talking about the samurai chicken, the raptor boyfriend himself, like I just said, Garrus Vakarian. We planned on covering Garrus at some point, obviously, but something just told me, let's expedite this and do it immediately. More specifically, we're gonna talk about Garrus from before the games. So just as we were doing with Miranda, we're gonna be talking about what we know about Garrus, you know, before the games as much as we can, and then leading up to the games.
Yeah. So this kind of like Miranda, we're gonna have. I mean, this is gonna be light on the game content, but more on other media like comics and stuff, right?
That's right. The earliest glimpse that we get at Garrus's life is during his adolescence. The comic Mass Effect Homeworlds has a couple pages from a flashback with Garrus and his dad. His dad is teaching him how to shoot a sniper rifle in this scene. And it's kind of a forced march. It's much to Garrus's chagrin. And if you're watching the live stream right now, then we're going to have a visual aid, a little screenshot from the comic up here.
Yeah, it's up, so it's up right here. Yep.
See what we're talking about. Basically, Garrus is like, oh, come on, Dad. You know, why are we doing this? I'm not going to get any better at this. And Garrus's dad says, then this is exactly when you try harder. This is when you pull yourself together and you do it. Because if you stop now, if you give up on something when it gets hard, you're never going to make it anywhere in life. That was my Garrus's dad impression.
That was good. That was good. I feel like every dad goes through a moment like this with their kid. And it's one of those things that, like, I mean, you got to be tough on your kid, but you don't want to be so tough you just break them, right?
Yeah. And I'm trying to balance, like, this comic is a reflection on how Garrus remembers this, I think.
Mm.
So maybe it wasn't that harsh, but at the same time, I think Mass Effect has a pretty steady track record of giving us reliable narration.
Yeah,
that there isn't a whole lot of unreliable narration in Mass Effect. So I don't think we should doubt it that much. But that means, is this too much pressure to put on a kid to tell them if you give up when something gets hard, you're never going to make it anywhere in life? And they're talking about like shooting range practice.
right. Yeah, there's another panel here and it says, I'm not doing this to punish you. My job as your father isn't to make your life easier. It's to teach you how to be an adult.
Right. And Tom, as a dad, is that fair to tell a kid?
Yes. So my philosophy, this could be a huge side tangent, but my philosophy as a father, having had two kids, one that's 22, one that's 12, is that I treat my children with respect because they are just smaller humans who have less life experience. That's really the main difference. And so when you do things to explain the why is extremely helpful in helping them understand the context and what's going on. Otherwise, it just feels like, oh, my dad's being really mean to me, because that's the initial feeling there. But to say, hey, this is important, this is why it's important, and by the way, you may not realize this, but my job is to get you ready to be an adult, right? I think that's totally legit. Now, how you deliver that and the kindness and the way you deliver that through a loving format or a more, I don't know, damaging format is, you know, could make a big difference as well.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if this is partly why Garrus feels the need to succeed, to get the suspect, to capture the bad guy at any cost, because his dad didn't seem to take a day off when it came to this kind of rhetoric. And his dad was very rigid. So it wasn't like, I think this is also a situation where it matters a lot more how you're saying something than mm-hmm. necessarily just what you're saying. And Garrus's dad was being a little bit of a hard ass.
Right. Yeah. It comes across very dry. Also, they're learning to shoot a gun.
Yes.
Like, this isn't like, hey, you know, you really should finish your homework and try a little bit extra hard at math. This is being able to shoot a sniper rifle will define you as an adult, right? Like, yeah, it's just a little more dire.
It's a little bit more dire. And I think we're led to believe that this is before Garrus does the mandatory military service that is required of all Turians, which would be at age 15. So we're led to believe that this is before Garrus is 15 years old. Okay, that's a little intense.
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, I feel like, yes, I agree with you, Tom, that this is justified and that Garrus's dad is being a good dad in this sense. But on the other side, I feel like this is going to breed a resentful child.
Yeah, it seems like this is the kind of thing that you pick and choose the time and place that you push this hard. And if you do it with everything, then you're not really doing it with anything.
Right.
You just sound like a hard ass all the time.
In my non-parent point of view for parenting, so take this for what it's worth. Anyone that's listening, I feel like if you're always the person who's, you know, yelling from the back and pushing them to go further, you know, then, and if you're never the person who can be their refuge in a storm, then they're not going to listen to the first part.
Right, right. There needs to be trust also. There needs to be, they need to feel that you are pushing them when it's the right time, but you're also a place that you can come for comfort. When you do fail, when you do try your hardest and you don't make it, you can still come in and get a hug and say, well, you know what? I saw you try your hardest. You did good. We'll try it again later. Yeah. It'll get better.
I think that's a very valuable lesson to tell anyone, really. You know, Day says here in chat, as a former child, I can tell you that I would have loved to have heard much more praise about my efforts than my capabilities.
Right, right. I saw you really try on that. And even though you didn't make it, you succeeded because you tried.
Yeah. Like, you know what? You busted your ass and I'm proud of that.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, that's important. And I don't think, maybe Garrus didn't get enough of that from his dad. Maybe his dad wasn't too good on the validation. But I do know that Garrus looked up to his dad. Mm-hmm. And so this has a very large fundamental shaping of who Garrus becomes when Garrus is older and the life that Garrus chooses for himself. We get another glimpse from Garrus's adolescence later in that same comic, but it's with his mom. His mom is in the hospital and apparently injured from a hit and run accident. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if you can call it an accident if it was a hit and run.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up here on the screen for everybody to see.
Yeah, so I guess hover cars are still hitting pedestrians since they said hit and run. I wouldn't guess that they are referring to someone like a hit being an assassination attempt.
Yeah, hit and run typically means vehicle.
Yeah, so I'm guessing hover cars are still hitting pedestrians, even on Palavin. Garrus runs to his mom, who is surprised to see him there because he was supposed to be on this shuttle for a study abroad trip. So as you can see in the panel, it says, you know, Garrus, you know, is hugging his mom in the hospital bed and says, what happened? And she says it was a hit and run. They said, I don't remember. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. And then she says, but what are you doing here? And references the study abroad trip. Should have left hours ago. He says, I didn't go. I heard you were here and I left the port. It doesn't matter. It was just a dumb trip anyway. I can take care of you now. We both know that Dad won't leave work to be here.
This is even more evidence of the father being kind of a hard ass.
Being the hard ass who's out trying to save the world and doesn't give a shit about his family, like that archetype. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe he cares, but it's not as big a priority as something else, which says a lot.
Yeah, I think it does. And I've seen this happen in real life with like friends' parents, you know, like specifically with their dad, who cared so much about the cause of what he was doing with work that he just neglected his family. And this, I mean, that speaks volumes that Garrus would say, we both know Dad won't leave work to be here, but his mom quickly rebuts it and says, you know, that's not fair because he called as soon as he heard that I was hurt. And you know, he wanted to come, but I told him not to because by the time that he arrived here from the Citadel, my injuries would be healed. So I told him not to leave work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, be that as it may, if he listened, you know what I mean? If he listened and he still didn't come, he's like, oh, well, you know, I should be healed by the time I get back there, so right. I might as well stay.
Right.
You know, that still says a lot about his priorities.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, so. there's a certain cold quality to that.
There is, yeah, it's a certain cold quality. It doesn't, it's weird because it doesn't speak to what he was saying about, you know, never giving up and his morality when it comes to that, but it does speak to how he values his family. And maybe in Turian society, that's not all that uncommon. Maybe that's the standard masculine point of view. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sorry.
Yeah, we don't have many other examples of what this would be like. So,
but we are getting one example here, you know, and the whole thing spawns a larger conversation between Garrus and his mom about sacrificing dreams for the family. And Garrus says that he has sacrificed his dreams for the family. And it also spawns a larger conversation about the weight of his father's shadow on Garrus.
Mm-hmm.
Garrus's mom says to him, your scholarship was for this summer only. If you don't go, you lose it. By the way, this all feels very human.
Right. Yeah.
If you don't go, you lose it. You won't qualify again. This was your dream. I won't let you waste it. Get back out there. And then he interrupts, saying that it's too late. And if he left her here, he would never forgive himself. And then he has this quote to say, which like cuts me really deep when I see it. Dad was right. He always said he'd support me in whatever I wanted to do, but he meant as long as it's what he wanted me to do.
Oof. Yeah. That's one of the things you have to watch yourself do as a parent, is sometimes the pressure you put on your children subconsciously are things that you care about more and you haven't really figured out that you need to weigh in what they care about. And because it's this habit you get in, you go, well, I'm the parent I know best. I'm the parent I know best. I'm the parent I know best. But there comes a point in your child's life, especially as they reach their like adolescent and teenage years, where there's only so much more of the coaxing that you can do in order to get them to do something. They're going to start making their own decisions and they're going to start figuring out what things they care about the most. And if you ignore that, they just push back against it. You have to validate, okay, I know you care about this, and then give them the ability to, the freedom to make some of those choices. That's part of the
transition.
Even
if some of those may be their own mistakes.
Yeah, sometimes even if it's their own mistakes, and that's the transition. And so that's where you see a lot of children, and having been a former child myself and everybody else here, having been a former child, I mean, think about your teenage years. At what point did your parents start trying to push you in a direction, and then you start pushing back. It's just natural. It's part of becoming your own person. The problem is that if the parents push too hard in a direction, the kids will push back by habit, not because they really want the other thing, but because they want the freedom to want whatever they want. And so it actually pushes them into an opposite thing, even if that's not the thing they really wanted. So there's complexity there.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's, I feel like I understood that, but not because of my dad. When Garris says, you know, he always said that he'd support me in whatever I wanted to do, but he meant as long as it's what he wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. As kind of like a fourth wall breaking thing. And I don't know if any of our listeners can relate to this, but I related to this on a level with my brother, because my older brother, who's 10 years older than me, is one of the people who raised me. But I noticed, and we grew up as like best friends, you know, like very close. He taught me how to ride a bike. He taught me how to throw a football. But there was a certain point, I think, you know, around middle school, high school, when I really started developing my own personality, you know, and I started liking my own music and having my own friends who were different from him. And the music was different from what he liked.
Right.
And my interests were different from what he liked. And then that's when I noticed he wasn't as close with me anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, as I'm approaching 30, I'm finally coming to this realization that I think he stopped supporting me because I wasn't pursuing what he wanted me to do anymore.
Yeah.
Because when I was like 12, I wanted to be just like him.
Right. Right.
But then when I stopped wanting to be just like him, that's when we grew apart. And so that's a hard realization for me to come to. But I think that's something that Garris was also coming to at this point, where Garris must have been about, you know, if Turian society is like human society, maybe he's about 17 or 18, talking about going away to college on a scholarship. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's about the age that he was. And so I don't think he's being a typical rebellious teenager. I think he also probably hasn't had much time to spend with his dad at all.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother dilemma, especially for young males who didn't get time with their male parental figure. That's a whole nother can of things, is not having enough time with either parent has a significant effect on your development as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so I felt exactly how Garris, you know, described it. And I think that there's a certain level of anger that Garris holds toward his dad, especially when he says that. You know, you can hear the anger and the hurt, that the pain in Garris, because people who don't care don't say that. But it's very clear that Garris, I think, feels imprisoned by the overwhelming personality and reputation that his father has as being this very successful CSEC officer.
Yeah.
It's particularly heartbreaking because in the very next panel in the comic, Garris tells his own mom, and it's vague whether or not he's telling his own mom or whether it's a monologuing and a reflection inside of his own head, because in the middle of this line, it jumps forward like 20 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And it says, it's Garris saying, "It's time I faced the facts. I'm an officer's son. That's all I'll ever be.
Like, I'm in the shadow of my dad."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll ever be. And right. When it says, "That's all I'll ever be," it's like the next scene is him then in the firing range in CSEC, where mm-hmm. his dad works. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of heartbreaking to see that jump in the comic, because it's like, damn, he was really... I don't think Garris felt like he was ever allowed to truly be himself.
Yeah. Yeah. He's always trying to live up to something else rather than define himself on his own terms.
Yeah. So maybe that's why he decides to join CSEC, because he doesn't just want to fight injustice, but because he feels like he has to.
Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. He's in the shadow of his father, and there's part of his mind that's probably going, I have to try to live up to this great man that he sees. I mean, every kid thinks their dad's Superman until all of a sudden life happens and then realize, oh, they're imperfect too, right?
Yeah.
But then there's the other side of like, well, what else am I going to do? This is what is expected of me. So I guess this is who I am. Even if I don't feel like I can succeed at it, this is who I am.
Maybe there's one of our listeners, you know, right now who their dad was a cop and they felt compelled to become a cop too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, your dad was in the military and you felt like you had to join the military as well. I feel like maybe this is why in my headcanon, Garrus and Ashley get along so well. Because if you think about Ashley's background with her family having a long military background, she didn't get to see her dad a lot. He was, you know, a hero, but then his name was disgraced because of something that was out of his control, his father's choice. And so I think if the same thing had happened to Garrus's dad, that someone in the family line had made a decision and then that was socially reprimanded and Garrus's family name was trashed, maybe Garrus would hate aliens as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of that stuff, developmental stuff, has a big impact on who we become. And so there are similarities there between both of them. Yeah.
So I feel like, I feel like Garrus and Ashley hold some similar qualities in that regard. But, you know, his dad, like I said, is looked up to. His dad is described a few times throughout the series as being by the book, which is so different from how Garrus sees things. We have a clip here from Mass Effect 1 where Garrus talks about kind of the way that he views morality and justice. And it's not by the book, I'll tell you that.
Thanks for bringing me on board, Commander. I knew working with a Spectre would be better than life at CSEC.
Have you worked with a Spectre before?
Well, no, but I know what they're like. Spectres make their own rules. You're free to handle things your way. At CSEC, you're buried by rules. The damn bureaucrats are always on your back.
Being a Spectre does have its advantages.
Exactly my point. If I'm trying to take down a suspect, it shouldn't matter how I do it, as long as I do it. But CSEC wants it done their way. Protocol and procedure come first. That's why I left.
So you just quit because you didn't like the way they do things?
There's more to it than that. It didn't start out bad, but as I rose in ranks, I got saddled with more and more red tape. CSEC's handling of Saren was typical. I just couldn't take it anymore. I hate leaving.
You did?
I hate leaving. That's how that ends.
I hate leaving, right? Yeah. Why did he throw that in there? I wonder, the way that Garrus talks about it, I wonder if he talks to people like his father, who would be very, you know, if he's by the book, then he says, you know, you stick to the rules, you do things this way. And I wonder if Garrus would reply and say something like,
listen to yourself, you're indoctrinated.
Call back.
This was soundbite was taken from Mass Effect 1, and I know that we were talking about Garrus before the game, so it's not before the games per se, but it's right at the beginning of Mass Effect 1, and it gives us a good idea of what Garrus's thinking was before he joins the Normandy and before Shepard can influence that in any way. So I think that this is the best unaltered lens we may get into Garrus's mind during the entirety of the three games from before we can affect it, because the player, of course, can affect it, Paragon or Renegade.
Yeah, this is pre-game character arc Garrus.
Yes.
This is who he is after all the events from these comics.
And yet it impacts who he becomes in Mass Effect 2 as well. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, we're in the middle of the show. Time to take a break and thank our patrons, including our extra special new Reaper tier patron. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back because we got a lot more Garrus pre-games to talk about.
America, we are endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
Did you hear that?
Was that? I did. Yeah, I heard that.
Was that my voice?
This Lork, I think we're becoming indoctrinated is what's happening.
Oh, no. That's weird. Well, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons. It's been a few weeks. Thank you for your patience in giving us a week off. I had an event in Las Vegas to go to for Elder Scrolls Online, and it was a lot of fun. So thank you for your patience, and we're happy to be back. And this week is our special episode because of our new patron, Max T. He's our Reaper tier patron, and thank you so much, Max. Also, welcome to Madison R joining the Patreon. This brings us up to 70 current patrons, and we have to shout out Max T, our Reaper, and our Shepherd tier patrons, Kolkashins, Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Tosino, That Spectre Guy, and William. Thank you so much to all of you and for supporting the show. If you are interested in checking out all the different things you can get from our Patreon, patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast is the place to go. And there's all sorts of stuff on there. You guys have heard me list all this stuff out before. But thank you for the support, genuinely. Also, we have a new review that came in over this last 2 weeks. This is from Skaven98, who
And I think this could actually be our Reaper tier patron.
Oh, is it? Is this?
I think it may be, because he signs off with Trip, which is, of course, what he goes by in the Discord.
Okay, so yeah, multiple names. So. Everybody has multiple names in different places. So this might be them. They write, the best podcast/vid station in the Milky Way. I've only been watching this for a week and mostly on YouTube, but I might be transferring here. I've been playing Mass Effect since the release of Mass Effect 2 when I was 10, almost 13 years ago. I love this game series and community for the fact it is the most unified fan base of any game, in my opinion. But about the podcast, I've been bouncing through several the last year, and I started my new job this last week and found y'all. They use y'all, which is fun because I don't, it's not part of my vernacular, so I have to like say it, y'all, at the same time, and have been listening since. Once I get paid, I'll buy into the Patreon for y'all. I appreciate for your informed you guys are. Sorry, I'm messing this up. And how entertaining and enthusiastic you guys are. I appreciate the hard work y'all do. The Morden cast are my favorite so far, especially the John Ebinger, and never knew about that renegade scene with him. Enjoy the day, y'all. P.S. I was listening to Morden's involvement in the Genophage, number 104, by you guys, as I wrote this. Thanks, Trip. So there you go. I messed that all up, but thank you so much, Scavid98 or Trip or our newest patron. Awesome stuff. So if you are interested in getting your words read out, then all you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review with some words, and we'll read it out in the future. Plus, if you listen on Spotify, you can always rate us on there, and you'll notice the most recent episodes all have questions like, what'd you think about this episode? So if you leave some kind comments on each of the episodes, that would be amazing as well. Lots of different ways you can help support us, and we appreciate all the help, because we couldn't do this if it wasn't for you. So thank you so very much. Anything else we got to shout out before we move on?
No, I think that's pretty much it. But, you know, thank you again to our new Reaper tier patron. And yeah, let's get back to Indoctrinated Week.
Here we go.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So before the break, Sam, you were saying in Mass Effect 1 that beginning part gave us a good exposition for Garrus and his mindset before we really get to know him, before he develops in the games.
Yeah, and, you know, we get a good idea that Garrus has thought this way for a little while before Shepard even comes to the Citadel, that he thinks the rules are, you know, meant to be bent, at least, if not broken. And Garrus, in the light of basically trying to prove to Shepard that sometimes the rules get in the way, Garrus references this other investigation and conversation, which must have happened sometime before Mass Effect 1. I'm not entirely sure when it was, but here we have another clip of when he's talking about it.
I remember this Solarian geneticist I was sent to investigate. That case was a bit disturbing.
What happened? Why were you investigating them?
I was tasked with tracking black market trade on the Citadel. Most of it harmless, nothing I needed to pursue. But during the course of my investigation, I noticed an increase in the trade of body parts, organs mostly. We usually get a few of those, but not the numbers I was seeing. We weren't sure if there was a new black market lab or if some freak was harvesting organs from citizens.
You've seen this before on the Citadel?
Every so often, some lab sells unwanted parts through the black market, but they're not as bad as the Cycles. I remember this one Elcor diplomat we caught in my first year on the job. He was hacking people up and selling their organs. Had the station in a bit of a panic.
But this case wasn't that clear-cut. Turns out there was more going on than we first realized.
So how did you figure out what was happening?
First, we got a hold of a sample and ran DNA tests. The weird thing was, the match led us to a Turian who was still alive and was very convinced he'd never lost his liver. After a bit of digging, I discovered this Turian worked briefly for Dr. Salion, the geneticist. So I went to his lab hoping to find evidence of cloned organ development, but there was nothing. No Salarian hearts, no Turian livers, not one Krogan testicle.
Not one Krogan testicle. You know,
not one of them.
As a side note here, rewatching this scene from the beginning of Mass Effect 1, and you have the beak-faced, sort of beak-faced, but the way that even how old this game is, the way, and I know they updated some of the stuff for Legendary Edition, but I'm sure a lot of these animations were left as they were. They still managed to make his mouth move in ways that convince me that those words are coming out of his mouth. It's just right. One of those little details that every so often you'll notice something again. You'll be like, man, look at what they were doing way back then. That's great.
Yeah, they had the nice, like, you know, Halo suffered a little bit of it when they tried to animate the Covenant's mouth. And I know that they had to spend a lot of money doing that. Mm-hmm. And I also know that BioWare didn't have as much money when they were trying to animate these things.
Yeah.
So
especially that first
game.
It
is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the top of his lips even move, they open like in certain ways that make it look like he's actually talking.
They have a similar like 4-point structure with their mouth, you know, similar, not the same, but similar. It's like, I kind of expected Garrus to be like, I'm the Arbiter.
Yeah. But it actually works. So anyway, I know that's a side note, but anyway, he's talking about testicles.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, four is 40,000, by the way, 40,000 for a full set. Mm-hmm. That's what he goes on to say after that. But, you know, this gives us a clearer picture of what kinds of cases Garrus is investigating, first of all. And it also seems to, it wasn't limited to corruption like in Saren's case. Of course, that's when we run into Garrus. He's investigating Saren because of what Shepard brought to Udina brought to the council. But his investigations also include more mundane things like homicide.
And
violent crime.
Right.
So given what we've learned about Garrus, that he doesn't feel that rules and regulations always apply to him, sometimes he thinks they get in the way, how do you think his investigation into the Salarian geneticist went? I mean, how do you think it went? He kept coming up empty. He wasn't finding anything when he got these leads.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling he took things into his own hands.
I have a similar feeling, but why don't we hear it from the samurai chicken himself?
Do about the geneticist? I brought in some of his employees for interrogation to see if I could get them to talk. While I was interviewing one of them, I came across something suspicious.
Good thinking. Lackeys are always easier to scare.
Exactly. Though in this case it paid off in a different way. One of my detainees started bleeding profusely during the interview. We offered to patch him up and he got frantic, freaked out. I ordered a full exam to find out what was going on. Our medics found incisions all over his body, some of them fresh. That was our big break. These people weren't just Dr. Salion's employees. They were test tubes. Walking, living test tubes.
So he was growing spare parts in his own employees.
Exactly. He cloned their organs right inside their own bodies. Then he harvested them and sold them off. Most of the victims were poor. He'd pay them each a small percentage of the sales, but only if the organs were good. Sometimes an organ wouldn't grow properly, so he'd just leave it in them. Most of them were a mess, but only on the inside, hidden, so nobody could see it.
I hope he got what he deserved.
That's the worst part. We never caught him.
Why not? What the hell happened?
He ran, blew his lab, grabbed some of his employees, and headed for the nearest space dock.
By the time I found out, his ship was already leaving. He threatened to kill his hostages if we tried to stop him.
But you went after him anyway, right?
I ordered Citadel Defense to shoot him down, but CSEC headquarters countermanded my order. They were worried about the hostages, worried about civilian casualties if the ship was destroyed so close to the Citadel. I told them those hostages were dead anyway. It just used them to make more organs. But they wouldn't listen.
No wonder you hated it there. Those idiots just let him fly away.
Yes, they did. I went to Palin and told him what I thought of him and his policies. He said if I didn't like it, I could quit. Well, I almost did. All they had to do was disable that ship, stop him from running. Maybe the hostages die, maybe they don't, but at least we stopped the bastard responsible for it all.
So, another side note here. Now they're talking about like growing organs inside people. I saw on Reddit, I think it was like yesterday, that there's a man from China who had something wrong with his nose. Like his nose was damaged and injured. And so he's growing another nose on his forehead. It's like grafted to his forehead, and they're going to take it off and then put it where it's supposed to go. It looks crazy. But in this example, they're growing organs inside their body, so you can't see them. But wow, we're already doing stuff like
using your head.
Yeah, but like that we've talked about, like some of the science and some of the medical stuff on previous episodes. This is a direct connection to some of that stuff. But we're already doing similar kinds of things. And the idea that somebody could be harvesting the people that work for them to use them as a place to grow organs, like, oh.
It's an intersection of crime and medicine. So I would love to see Garrus on an episode of Law and Order.
Right?
Wouldn't you?
We joked about this before. Somebody needs to do like a web series of like Law and Order Mass Effect Edition or something.
Well, there is a live action, well, not live action, but like a tabletop podcast that's, you know, the mm-hmm. Mass Effect Blue Shift.
Same kind of thing, I guess. Like if you think
Law
about
and Order.
It. Yeah.
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 I actually, you know, because of my job, I end up looking through a lot of court documents that include detective's notes about investigations into a lot of grisly things. And I actually offered to them, I was like, you know, I could consult for you guys and let you know how these investigations, like what are some of the things that they find. And yeah, it could be fun.
Wow.
Because I think, you know, Law and Order, wasn't that written by a journalist?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many variations on it over the years.
Or maybe a former detective. Maybe. I thought most of the episodes were created or written by someone with inside knowledge, but I might be wrong.
No, that could be a thing. I don't know. I'm sure somebody out there knows. Somebody on the internet listening to this knows the answer to that. So
yeah,
let us know. So, back to it.
So yeah, anyway, back to Garrus, who would totally be the iced tea of the Normandy.
Absolutely. Totally. Yeah.
You can track down Dr. Saleon, that geneticist he's talking about, and you can bring Garrus along. But ultimately, it is up to Shep how things play out, whether Shep advocates for Garrus letting go of the anger and letting justice be carried out without emotion, or Shep can let Garrus fulfill his, you know, revenge fantasy, which something tells me has more to do with Garrus's unresolved issues than it does with Dr. Saleon, no matter how much messed up Dr. Saleon was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're beginning to see the origins of his need to do that.
Yeah. Dr. Saleon's messed up, but letting Garrus blow his brains out all over the back of the thing, like summarily execute him, that says way more about Garrus. And so I've done both. I've done the Paragon route. I've done the Renegade route, and you really do see Garrus change a little bit. Given, you know, how you handle those things and in continuing into Mass Effect 2. And I don't like the person that Garrus becomes under the Renegade guidance, to be honest.
It kind of breaks the whole Batman thing a little bit. The whole Batman doesn't kill people, brings them to justice. Like,
and that's why a lot of people will actually say, no, Garrus is not Space Batman. He's Space Punisher.
Right. Yeah.
Which I can see that actually a little bit more, because Garrus is not a little rich kid. He doesn't have a lot of gadgets, yeah, and
true.
Also doesn't have a cool butler.
True.
Which would have been awesome.
Yeah. Imagine if you get a companion that brings their butler with them onto the Normandy.
That would be the Eclipse companion, since they're all, you know, very so wealthy,
weird.
You know?
Yeah, that'd be so weird.
So Garrus says that CSEC headquarters countermands his order to shoot down the ship. Who could that have been in CSEC headquarters? Mm-hmm. Who do we know that has a high-ranking position and is well-respected and probably keeping tabs on Garrus's investigations that may have countermanded his order to break the law and shoot down a ship, summarily executing the person on board?
Right. Dad, just leave me alone. Gosh, yeah, Dad.
Maybe it's his dad.
Yeah.
We also know that his dad had an authority over investigations that Garrus was leading. That's totally not a conflict of interest at all.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, that would be terrible.
But at least his dad has integrity when it comes to, like, workplace ethics. Because if anything, his dad was scrutinizing the ethics of his investigations too hard. He wasn't letting him slip by. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Garrus, his dad, and his job, here's what Garrus tells us in Mass Effect 1.
Probably the same as most officers. I wanted to fight injustice, wanted to help people. I guess my father had something to do with it, too. He was CSEC, one of the best. I grew up hearing about his accomplishments or seeing his picture on the vids after a big arrest. He's taking my resignation pretty hard.
He's not impressed that you're going after Saren?
My father's a CSEC man to the bone. Do things right, or don't do them at all, he says. He thinks I'm being too rash, too impatient. He's worried I'll become just like Saren. He actually talked me out of becoming a Spectre when I was younger, for the same reasons.
You were asked to be a Spectre?
Well, I was targeted as a possible Spectre candidate, me and about 1,000 other Turian military recruits. I could have received special training, but my father didn't like it. He despises the Spectres. He hates the idea of someone having unlimited power with no accountability. He wouldn't like you, Commander. No offense.
1,000. That they cast a wide net.
Yeah. I also, you know, as much as we were ragging on Garrus's dad earlier, I understand why he doesn't like the Spectres.
Yeah.
A branch of clandestine operatives who are above the law and have no accountability. No thanks. You know.
Yeah. He is lawful good. Like,
yes.
To the T, right? Even if it gets in the way of doing good, I will stick to the law, right?
The lawful good paladin who can't be there for his family.
Right, and a Spectre, by definition, is lawful, is neutral good. Is just...
You would hope.
They would hope. Their intentions should be good, right? That's why you would have them. And they are neutral. They can do what they want. They don't have to follow the law. They can be chaotic if they need to, as long as they accomplish the good thing they're supposed to set out to do, right?
Assuming the irony that is that, like, I don't think that they would be neutral good. I would think, because they're good, that would be the motivation behind all their decisions, right?
Right.
The good or evil. But I don't think that the motivation behind all their decisions should be, isn't necessarily in the job description as you have to be good. It's you have to, all of your decisions have to maintain galactic order.
Yeah. Oh, so it's almost like it's
like
don't a three-dimensional
have to do that through
thing.
Doing, through operating within the law.
Right, right. We'll dig into this more in the future. Okay, so let's get back to Garrus.
Right. So for Garrus, I think this is important because Garrus said that his father would tell him, do things right or don't do them at all. Well, this is referencing a very specific instance in the lore that many people may not know about. And you guessed it, it's from the comics. More specifically, it's a reference to an investigation where Garrus and his father butt heads while both of them worked at CSEC. Garrus is at the firing range. You remember, like I told you, he's at CSEC Academy, he's at the firing range. When his fellow detective tells him, hey, did you hear? Our suspect just walked loose. You know, he's out of here. And Garrus asks, what? What happened? By who? And it turns out his father made the order. And I was like, hold on, why would his father cut a suspect loose? And I, of course, that's what the reader is supposed to think. And then you turn the page and you read, and it turns out Garrus confronts his father, and he's angry because he's thinking, just like the reader, do you know how long I've been building this case against Kishpah? That's the suspect's name, Kishpah.
Oh, Kishpah.
And then his father snaps, and, well, it doesn't snap quite yet. He just matter-of-fact says, evidence tampering, witness coercion, assault. You call that making a case? Which is, I love this part because it's, you know, it's the very stereotypical, you're a liability to the department.
Right.
Give me your badge.
Yeah.
In other words, Garrus was under scrutiny because his methods were wrong and illegal. And it seems Garrus was under more scrutiny than the average CSEC officer.
Right.
So his dad, who is pretty high in the department, is keeping tabs on Garrus's investigations and finds he was breaking a number of laws in this case he was building against Kishpah. And then Garrus's dad turns to Garrus and says, I expect that from these rookies who call themselves CSEC officers nowadays, not from you.
This new generation sucks. They're all terrible. They're lazy. They don't work hard. Whatever.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Every generation does that. But yeah, it was his, but that's his job. His job is to, now he probably focuses too much on Garrus, but his job is to review the cases and go, okay, this is not going to stand up in court because he used illegal means of getting this stuff done, so we have to cut this one. You did it wrong, we gotta cut it. It just makes sense.
And yeah, breaking the fourth wall, like you said, that's what happens. That's what happens when detectives and police don't follow the rules in terms of how they get information from sources. Right. Evidence can be thrown out of court that way,
and then the next thing
that you know, it's a mistrial.
Right. And so why waste everyone's time? Like that's his job is like, okay, well, this isn't going to stand trial anyway, so we have to cut it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you send him to trial with faulty evidence or it looks like the police department broke the law in pursuing him, he's untouchable. Now he can never be tried for that crime again.
Yeah, it's not good. It also makes the department look bad publicly.
Very bad. Yeah. Some of the worst PR cases for any police department have been because of reasons like this. So from a professional point of view, I understand why Garrus's dad did it, but I think it was more than just professional in nature why he did this.
Yeah.
It was personal,
right,
that he couldn't believe his own son was doing this.
Right.
So they get into this argument that can be summed up with Garrus shouting at his dad, look, old man, you know, you don't know what it's like out there anymore. It's brutal. You know, you just sit on your ass all day. And what do you want? You'd rather I spend time doing paperwork? And it's kind of like the stereotypical argument between, I guess, inferior and superior in law enforcement settings. And then Garrus's dad actually snaps. And his dad says, so if you don't like the rules, you just break them? Is that it? Now, does that line sound similar to what Shepard just said to Garrus with, so if you don't like things, you just quit?
Right, yeah. Yeah,
and that can be a paragon way to approach Garrus about things. But this is what Garrus's dad tells Garrus: if you don't like the rules, you just break them. Is that it? And his dad like lays into him, telling him this is why the rule of law is important, especially for law enforcement officers. And he expresses that, you know, given the millions of people, the millions of lives on this station, the Citadel, how much responsibility rides on CSEC officers' shoulders. So I understand where he's coming from. I understand why he's laying into him. But Garrus is like still rebellious because he still, I think, is fighting this anger against his dad, who was never there but didn't allow him to be himself. And, you know, he says, Garrus's dad says to Garrus, it's not meant to be easy, but if filling out paperwork is too much for you, maybe you're not cut out for it. Do things right, Garrus, or don't do them at all.
Yeah. This is interesting because he's pushing it back against his dad. And because he's pushing back against his dad, he's not willing to see the thing that his dad's teaching him. But in the instance, like you drew, the connection to Shepard kind of giving the same guidance, he's more open to that from Shepard because Shepard isn't his dad. And so that's what enables the character arc that we see through the games, where it wouldn't have happened in this situation working at CSEC.
Exactly. But you can also agree with Garrus and be like, yeah, rules get in the way, and you can be renegade.
Sure, sure. But
and you can be a bad influence on
it. Right, you could be a bad influence, but it allows for the good influence, should you choose it, to be something that plays out. You would have to wonder, in the C-Sec situation, if he wasn't reporting to his father, or at least his father wasn't overseeing some of what was going on, would he have been more open to this critique from somebody else?
Maybe. I think, yeah, maybe. And it's also, I think, Shepard is not reprimanding Garrus while telling him this. Mm-hmm. But you can get pretty stern as being a Paragon with Garrus in Mass Effect 1. And I remember first time I played Mass Effect 1, I wanted to be Paragon, but I also liked Garrus. And then, like, I told him off like that, and I got a little bit sad. I was like, no, don't be mean to Garrus.
Oh, no. He's my friend.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my friend. You didn't need to be that mean to him. But Shepard was right, you know? This is the exact splitting point, by the way, that leads Garrus to not talk with his father for a long time. And Garrus's father's name, by the way, is Castus. His name is Castus Vicarion. I'd like to think that they named him Castus because he's casting judgment all the time.
Yeah, maybe.
And the reason we know his name is Castus is, and I was withholding it because of this, but the reason we know his name's Castus is because of Mass Effect Andromeda. We don't learn his name until much later.
Huh. I'm looking up the definition. It actually means chaste, virtuous, or pious.
Well, that totally checks out.
So there you go. Yeah.
So was question for you for discussion and for anyone that's listening to ponder, was Garrus's dad or Garrus in the right here? About Kishpaw, about using those tactics to try to get the suspect, or was Garrus's dad right in terms of cutting the suspect loose and saying no?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, in the future, you're going to do it right.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, obviously he's doing it for two different reasons. But even if you just look at the department trying to be by the book because they need to, he had to. There wasn't really an option there. Now, did he have to lay into his son in the way that he did? Does that bring up a whole history between them? And does that actually resonate with Garrus? Does he actually learn anything in that situation? That's another question.
I think it comes down to the two different ways to view the world in terms of when you get to a destination, do the methods matter or do the ends justify the means?
Right.
And Garrus is very much the latter.
Yeah.
Where he thinks, well, if I get this piece of crap off the streets, why does it matter how I did it?
Right. Right. Because, yeah, it's... We could go into the morality of this a lot, but the short term justification for things is usually the thing that the villain does.
Yeah.
And the long term actually is usually the wiser thing, because you might be successful in the short term, but in the long term, it's going to cause more problems than it actually solves.
This is exactly why Garrus's dad said he was worried about Garrus when he resigned from the department, and he was worried that he would become like Saren.
Right.
Because Saren has the ends justify the means.
Right.
He doesn't care how he treats people.
Right.
It's all as part of a goal.
Yeah. And as soon as your ends change, all of a sudden, all of that goes out the window. You're doing bad things using bad methods, and it's just all bad. So.
Yeah, pretty much. If you can justify using any means necessary to achieve a goal, your goal is never going to be virtuous.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So,
do you have another question here, or do you want to move on to the next thing?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's zero room for messing up because of the pressure that Garrus's dad puts on him. You know, he was right. I think Garrus's dad was right. But how do you think the way that he's handling this, apparently in front of like an office full of people, would make Garrus feel?
Right. Yeah. It's rough. This is real rough for Garrus.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think it puts an insane pressure on him because he was already expected to live up to his father. Right.
Right. Right. And here he is failing publicly in front of everybody. And that
very publicly.
Does
and
not
what
feel
we
good.
Are. We already know about Turian culture that honor and family and name and caste here. It matters a lot.
Yeah.
And so to like fail in a law enforcement setting in public because you were doing things wrong, this would like deduce a lot of social credit score from Garrus here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, this is like public death to the Turians, right? And this is just like the worst thing that could possibly happen, at least emotionally, you know? So we understand Garrus's view of rules and laws. He's certainly on the chaotic side of the D&D alignment at this stage in what he's doing. What about his morality?
I think there's no doubt about it that Garrus is a good person. I think he cares about justice. He wants to do right by people. He cares about the truth more than he cares about, you know, law or breaking the law or anything like that. That's probably why he gets so upset when the council tries this bullshit cover story after the Citadel is attacked, and then so many people believe it, that it wasn't actually a Reaper, that it was the Geth, and that it was just, you know, Sovereign was just this ultra advanced ship led by a renegade Spectre, and he knows that that's not true.
Right.
Garrus knows that, you know, what truly happened. And he cynically remarks on this in one of the comics. He says, it's easier to pretend a tragedy never happened, that a problem never existed, than to deal with it directly.
Yeah. Just shut your eyes. It goes away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, let me bury my head in the sand like an ostrich and all my problems. I can't see them.
La, 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 la. Cover your ears. Close your eyes.
Yeah. It's sad because, honestly, I see a lot of that in our society, especially over the past few years.
Yeah, it's a very common human reaction to things, especially when things defy their own expectations or the belief in the world. And and then it goes against the things that you use for your identity, and it challenges your identity and who you believe you are in the world. All of that stuff becomes very difficult for people.
And when people are dug in enough that they definitely do not want to accept the reality of a situation, good luck trying to be the one to tell them what the reality is, because they will not just shoot the messenger, they will fucking eviscerate the messenger.
Right. Well, it's similar to the whole Mark Twain quote about it's easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled.
Yeah.
Like, that is absolutely 100% true, and that quote is 150 years old. So
yeah. It's Donald Trump's fucking mantra, but we go on. Sorry. Oof. So as fourth wall breaking, I have COVID right now. It's not fun. It hasn't been fun. I also have family members that still believe that it's a hoax. I won't go into that either.
Gosh,
yeah. But it's easier to fool people than it is to convince them they've been fooled.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder how Garrus would feel about COVID.
Jeez.
Well, actually, we do know how he feels about the plague on Omega, but we'll have to get into that point a little bit later. But here's where my praise for Garrus stops. You remember Kish Paw, that suspect who got cut loose because of Garrus's sleazy tactics? Well, Garrus resigned from CSEC to go with Shepard and track down Saren. After Saren was defeated, though, Garrus went back to the Citadel, and he grew disgusted by this blissful ignorance about the Geth and about Sovereign and yada, yada, yada. So he goes to set out and right, quote unquote, right some wrongs and do what he couldn't do before. Get Kish Paw.
Ah.
So Garrus tracks him down. He chokes him and he tells him he is just as free to break the law as Kish Paw is. Whoa, that's a little scary. Yeah. So he better tell him where these drugs he's getting are coming from. And the intimidation works. And Garrus gets this lead that takes him to Omega. And we're sharing a little panel from the comics on the screen right now where you can see Garrus is choking out Kish Paw and very clearly embracing this evil side of getting things done.
Right, right. The vigilante kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is part of why people call him Batman. But
exactly, yeah. So this lead that Kish Paw gives him takes him to Omega. Coincidentally, CSEC also threatens to arrest and jail Garrus if he doesn't stop with the vigilante shit. So he takes off for Omega, where he becomes the ultimate vigilante.
Batman.
He becomes Batman or Space Punisher or, Space you know, Punisher. Insert vigilante name, whoever you'd like here.
Yeah.
From the moment he steps into the docking terminal, he sees a Vorcha trying to rob an elderly woman at knife point. Uh-huh. It's the typical bad guy, like, give me all your money. I don't care. I'm going to take pleasure in killing you.
Meh. You know? Stick him up. Meh. Stick it up.
Yeah. I'll take pleasure in nothing.
Right.
And then Garrus just goes up and bonk, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'll take pleasure in killing you. And then don't swear to Vorcha, swear to me.
Here you go, ma'am. Here's your stuff back. Have a good day.
Thank you, yeah, Archangel.
Exactly. Yeah.
And pretty much, Garrus promptly kicks the Vorcha's ass and lets the woman and her husband go. And then she tells Garrus that he is a, quote, real life angel. And hence,
so we get the origin of the name
Archangel.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, cool stuff. I mean, I think this is part of why people like him is because he's relatable. Like, who hasn't been in a situation where they were just like, screw the rules. I need to get the, I need to do the right thing. I need to get it done. It's going to be better. Like, sometimes you feel that way, right? Like, absolutely. Yeah. The anti-hero is always an attractive character.
Yes. And, you know, but I also think, and maybe this is just me getting older. No, sometimes not all the rules are right. You know, like,
yeah.
Even for well-meaning people, sometimes they should be changed. But then you just advocate for the rule to be changed.
Right. Don't there are ways to work within the system, at least until the system is absolutely broken. There are ways to work within the system to change things.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's harder. It takes a lot longer to do. But you can't change a system by just burning it down. I mean, you can, but then you burn everything else down too. You throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, I think you can't change a system and do good permanently by deciding that you're not going to be a part of any system.
Right, right. Anarchy only breeds anarchy. And then the strongest that survives then takes power afterwards. Like, it's not a good solution.
Yeah. Unless you think that, like, you should be allowed to be an anarchist, but everyone else should have to play by the rules, in which case you're just an asshole.
Yeah. Now you're just, that's no different than, like, oh, well, these rich people. Well, you're doing the same thing. You believe that you're above everybody else just in a different way because you have the moral authority to do it rather than lots of money. Like, you're just using the same justification with different methods. It's, yeah. So. Well, that was fun. Anything else before we wrap up the episode?
No, I that's fun. I think that's pretty much that's Indoctrinated Week. I was planning to get to Garrus at some point in the future throughout these character episodes. But of course, next week is the patron chat, right?
Yeah, so, coming up next week.
And then after that, we'll go back to Miranda episodes. And next month we'll have to chat and see with our Reaper patron what they'd like to do and when they'd like to indoctrinate us again.
Yeah. Yeah. So Max T, our Reaper patron, thank you for this suggestion. This was a really fun episode. And if you decide to stay a Reaper tier patron next month, we'll do another Reaper indoctrination episode for whatever you decide to choose. And like you mentioned, next week on the 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific is our patron chat. So if you are a tier 4 shepherd or a Reaper tier patron, you're welcome to join us on that chat. So come join us next week. Sam, you got anything else going on this week?
I do. Yeah. Like I said, I have COVID, so I don't know how long I'll be able to stream, but I'm going to be streaming more neutral shepherd. Who I have not been able to get Garrus to be neutral. So, but
yeah,
I am almost done with like Mass Effect 3. It's getting a little insane. I'm about to do Rannik and so Tali's not alive and I never woke up Legion. So I don't know how I'm going to handle the Geth-Khorian war conflict and what's going to happen there. There's like a Geth VI who looks just like Legion, but weird. Says he's not, like, he doesn't go by Legion.
What is your name? Not Legion.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's
cool.
The same voice actor. And
yeah, of course.
So yeah. I don't know how the end is going to go. I don't know if I'll be able to save either one of them. Maybe they all die. I have no idea. But yeah, that's going to be exciting. And you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at N7TheLegend.
Awesome. Yeah, go check out his streams. That sounds fun. I'm sure it's going to be chaotic and terrible. And robotsradio.net for all of the other shows on the network, including my shows. You guys know where all that stuff is. And thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning in. Chat, thank you for joining us for the live show. And I'm looking forward to chatting with our patrons next week. We'll see you then. Until then, stay safe out there. And, you know, maybe don't be angry at your dad so that you murder people.
That's how you become indoctrinated.
That's it. See you later. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.